Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. Before we proceed any further, I want to say two things. First, I hope you fared well in the wake of Hurricane Helene's onslaught. And if you didn't, if you did sustain damage or loss of any kind, my heartfelt condolences to you. Secondly, I want to thank Glenn Hatchell, who hosted Talking Animals last week in my absence. Glenn conducted a wide-ranging, highly informative conversation with his friend and colleague, Mariah Shesky. They covered an array of canine issues befitting two dog behaviors, including offering enormously timely tips and addressing the then-looming Hurricane Helene. By the way, Glenn returns for another edition of Ask the Trainer right here on Talking Animals on November 20th. My guest today, meanwhile, is Melissa Zepeda, an attorney and animal rights advocate, but this description doesn't begin to capture the breadth of her interests and topics that have animated her activism. As just one measure of this, Melissa is slated to be a speaker at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest happening November 2nd at Perry Harvey Senior Park, addressing Amendment 2, which seeks to establish a constitutional right to hunt and fish. Possible spoiler alert, Melissa is adamantly opposed to the amendment and will articulate the reasons in her Veg Fest talk, which lands conveniently just prior to Election Day, November 5th. We'll also be, of course, discussing Amendment 2 here and sort of a sneak preview of that talk, just in a little bit here on Talking Animals. But in a similar realm of what might be called explanatory activism, she launched a YouTube channel recently, Florida Loves Animals, offering segments designed to inform Floridians about important animal issues in their state. Other commitments Melissa juggles include serving as a volunteer on the Florida Wildlife Commission's Bear Stakeholder Group to monitor bear management activities of the FWC. It sounds like she does a lot and accomplishes a lot. You're reading this message loud and clear. Hang tight, there's more. We'll discuss much of her advocacy when I speak with Melissa Zepeda in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Coming up later in today's program, I'll speak with Jason Cowan, Executive Director of Friends of Boyd Hill Nature Preserve, one of the organizations participating in this unusual but significant upcoming fundraiser called Brews for Birds. It's a beer crawl happening on Sunday, October 13th, involving four St. Pete establishments and aiming to raise money to protect raptors from rodenticides by funding lab tests to help analyze these cases and help, obviously, prevent this problem from increasing. We'll hear more about the risk to raptors and efforts to mitigate these risks when we talk with Jason Cowan later in today's show. Right now, though, let's discuss Amendment 2 and other issues with attorney advocate Melissa Zepeda, our first guest today, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Melissa Zepeda, Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, and thank you for joining us in studio. Yay!
My pleasure.
In studio guest. That's what we love. So, I feel like there's lots to cover here, and of course, as teased, as they say in the biz, we will, of course, be discussing Amendment 2, which we'll be discussing in greater detail, perhaps, at VegFest.
That's right.
But before we get into discussing those topics, and we'll cover other animal welfare issues that you think are important as we have time, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of time. But I think it's often useful, before we get into this kind of conversation, to explore parts of someone's story that precedes the animal work that they're now doing, just to kind of find out a little bit of an origin story and just sort of a background. So what did animals mean to you as a kid?
Well, I grew up with animals, like a lot of us. My mother rescued all of our animals. And so I get my love of animals from her. And my mom, I hope you're listening. Hi, Mom.
I'm sure she is.
And, so I grew up with animals, and I've always loved animals. And it wasn't until about high school where I was sitting down with a debate friend at a cafeteria, and I was talking about how much I love my dogs and how wonderful they were. And she told me that, well, then why are you eating a hamburger if you love animals so much? And I said, well, a cow's different than a dog. And she said, well, how? And I said, well, we live with dogs. And she said, well, in other countries, they eat dogs. Are you okay with that? And I said, no. And she said, well, in other cultures, eating pigs are okay. In other cultures, eating dogs are okay. So she pointed out how irrational it was to love dogs and say, I love animals, but then I was eating a hamburger. So that's when it kind of snapped for me. And I just made the change then and there. I was like, you know what? I didn't take personal offense. I just said, you know what? you're right. That if I say I love animals, then why am I eating this burger? And that was the last burger I ate, was at that my high school cafeteria.
Wow, that's really, I mean, I've heard variations of this story, not surprising, maybe quite a few times over the years, but usually there's much more discussion, if not pushback, just like more of a little bit, you know, to the person who's being presented that information as you were, it's like, wait, what are you talking about? It doesn't usually sink in that quickly because people were all so indoctrinated to a certain way. So
when you have a lot of friends on the debate club, you don't really take things personally. And I think that's why studying law appealed to me, because when someone presents you with information, that new information that you haven't heard before, instead of taking it personally, you just say, okay, well, is this rational? Is this reasonable? Do I have a counter argument? Like I said, well, you know, we live with dogs. We don't live with cows and we don't live with pigs. But when you break down the argument further and you say, well, some people, you know, treat pigs as pets, and then some people treat dogs like pigs and slaughter them. So if you love animals, then there isn't a rational basis to say you love animals.
And this was in high school, you
say? And this was in high school, yes.
Okay, well, I think you were probably a pretty precocious high school student, it sounded like. Debate club or no debate club? Because again, that's just a little more sophisticated thinking, and just a lot of us, even if it weren't like contentious kind of exchange.
Not contentious at all.
Right, but I'm just saying, even if there weren't in another instance like what you're describing, but with someone else, there'd still be like at least some time to sort of like think about what your friend had pointed out. And say, I got to think about this, or I don't know about this, or, you know, up through and including, well, that's, you know, flat no, I just disagree, debate club or no debate club.
And, I just could not think of a rational argument, and I won't age myself, but decades later, I still have no rational counter argument to why we would love some and eat others. So.
Right. But even then, it's often like a more of a gradual process. Even if when someone embraces that fundamental argument, it's often some time that passes as people ponder, as they make some lifestyle changes, as they prepare to make some lifestyle changes. And even those often are gradual.
Oh, so, absolutely. You know, I when I came home to my mom and I was like, I'm vegetarian now. The word vegan way back then was not really a
foreign word. Yeah.
And so, and there was absolutely a transition. I was not one of those that can just flip a light switch, you know, I stopped eating beef immediately, stopped eating pork immediately, stopped eating chicken immediately. Those were the easy ones to let go for me. And everyone has a different, you know, different, you know, comfort level with how to transition.
Yeah.
And I stayed on fish for years, and then it just transitioned. You know, everyone takes their time transitioning, but
right.
I think as long as you acknowledge that you're that you need to be on a certain path and you get there, that's what's important.
So at some point along the way, because it sounds like just that initial conversation with that high school friend kind of set this in motion.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere along the line, I'm guessing in addition to that, there might have been something where you witnessed or at least heard about some kind of injustice or maybe even cruelty that was an animal experience.
Oh, yeah. My mom, so, you know, none of us are, most of us, are not born vegetarian or born animal advocates. Well,
right.
My mom took us to a circus when my sister and I were very, very young. Hi, Bonnie, if you're listening. And my mom learned about the cruelty with circuses many decades ago. And she told us, she's like, after that first one, I am never doing this again.
You guys were at the first circus you had been to, and somebody like had a pamphlet or explained what happened?
She never said that there was someone with a pamphlet, but she said the way.
Was it at the circus itself? I mean, or was it at the circus? Was there a protest or was there information?
She did not tell me that there was a protest. She just said when she saw those animals, she sensed, because my mom was a big animal lover, she sensed just the misery of the animals, and she said, I will not go to another circus, and bless her, she has never done it. And then when I learned about the circuses, that was my first protest in college, was a circus protest.
Okay. Well, it sounds like people in your family get the point very quickly. Right, because I mean, you got the point when you're in high school with that friend said, well, why are you having burgers if you feel this way about dogs and other animals?
Mm-hmm.
And your mom, like, was just at the circus,
right,
apparently with no other information,
with
just
no other
watching it unfold, and said, this is too disturbing.
This
I'm an animal
lover. This is too disturbing.
Lover.
I'm out.
But there's a lot of people that go claiming to be, and truly, I think, are animal lovers that aren't bothered by when the elephant rears up or has a tutu on or whatever the heck might be going
right.
on.
Right.
And so, again, I just think there's something in the bloodline over there that makes people like get the point super quickly.
Yeah, my mom, she was, you love animals, but then there's a way where you sort of sense if they're feeling stressed or you sense that they're feeling sadness. And I think my mom, when she saw that, she immediately responded, well, this isn't a good situation, where I think people enjoy watching animals, but maybe they don't tap into that deeper connection, as in, well, is that animal happy? Is that animal sad?
Yeah.
And my mom, she just got it right away. And when I attend circus protests now, you know, I don't yell at anyone because I'm like, that could have been my mom, and I don't want anyone yelling at my mom either. And so I try to approach them like, look, you know, the animals are sad. This isn't a good experience for them. And, I try to talk with them and to people who still attend circuses and just tell them. And most circuses have animal welfare violations. And so once people are like, oh, they have an animal welfare violation, then they start listening, because it's not just it's not abstract anymore. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And but some people will still like, nope, I've gone to the circus all these years, I'm going to keep going to the circus. So it's like trying to stop momentum, like, but this is what I've always done.
Yeah.
And
one of the things about that and other issues too, but I think it may be particularly true, well, actually, some of the things we'll get into in Amendment 2, I think, are related. This is a thing about it. But sometimes it's just families have cultural elements, and sometimes, like, for generations, we've gone to the circus, and we're going to continue to go to the circus, even in the face now, which they didn't have two generations ago or even
right.
one generation ago, evidence about how difficult it is, the cruelty, like the way you get an elephant to do those things or horrifying if you knew about them behind the
right.
scenes.
Right. And now with Google, I say, just if you don't believe me, just Google elephant training black box. That's it. You don't have to believe me. You can watch videos and read articles about how the elephants have to be broken, how they have to be trained in order to perform.
Yeah.
And then I just let them, you know, look for it themselves.
So sounds like the circus protest you went to in college was kind of pivotal. In your own...
Yes, because I enjoyed the activism. I enjoyed... I growing up, I was very shy. I was picked on a lot. And so I felt like...
Why would you be picked on?
Oh, I was picked on like, oh, you're ugly. Oh, it was just... It was very, very Jeez. Brutal growing up.
Wow.
And
where was this?
Atlanta.
Okay.
Atlanta, Georgia. And so I felt like, you know, people are picking on me. And I haven't done anything wrong. Like, I'm a shy kid. I don't say anything. Why are people picking on me? And then I look at animals and I see the same thing. People picking on them, hurting them. And so I'm like, well, I can speak up for them because they can't speak up for themselves. So that's when I started.
That's when an activist was born?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, that's, I'm sorry it took being picked on to help create that, but I mean, it is true that it
makes you stronger.
Right, it's the underdog, it's kind of the, not necessarily the weaker person, because you weren't weak, but you were just somehow the person that was identified to be bullied or picked on or criticized or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and you make that identification with the animals that don't have anybody speaking on their behalf,
right.
and sometimes it's a very powerful
You see them pushing, passion. Being pushed around, and you're like, well, wait a minute, that's not fair.
Yeah. So this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Melissa Zepeda, an attorney and accomplished animal rights advocate with a notable breadth of interest in topics that have animated her activism, including Amendment 2, which seeks to establish a constitutional right to hunt and fish. We'll be discussing it shortly here on Talking Animals, but she'll also be addressing that Amendment 2 at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest coming up November 2nd at Perry Harvey Senior Park. So if you have any questions for Melissa about Amendment 2 or about other animal rights issues or anything related, or just like to offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So basically, was it in college, with all those things collectively, having been what you grew up with, and the protests that you participated in, is that kind of what solidified your status as kind of an animal advocate?
Yes, and I knew the best way to do it, so I because I can get really emotional really fast with animals, I could not be a veterinarian. There were things that I knew I had my own emotional limitations.
Did you originally plan to be a veterinarian?
I thought that was the best way to help animals, but I actually, what drew me was law. Like, the best way to help animals, like, you can become vegetarian, you can become vegan, you can be a rescuer, but at the end of the day, what makes the biggest difference for animals is changing the law. Yeah. We can rescue a dog, we can rescue cats, and I do, I'm a foster mom, but until we change the law, nothing will change for the animals.
Well, I had a note here to ask you a question about if your chief motivation for going to law school was to become more effective an animal advocate, and it sounds like that was exactly
that's absolutely kind of, right. Yeah.
Like you say,
I was the Legally Blonde before the Legally Blonde became a movie.
Yeah. You should be getting some kind of royalties, it seems to me, then. But no, because I think it's important, and there's so many people that have been on this show, or you go to conferences, whatever, and a huge percentage of them, whatever else they do, they're also lawyers. And I think it's for that very reason that just understanding the law and how certain toothless animal protection ordinances or regulations could maybe be fortified, or how certain nefarious legislation like ag laws could be punctured or hopefully even defeated. So just having that background critical.
It is critical. I wish more people had, at least even in high school or college, some courses to teach you how to to teach you what they teach us in law school about how to read something or how to write something, because like Amendment 2 that we're going to be talking about, most people are going to read it and say, oh, right to hunt and fish. Well, we already have that. And so they may vote one particular way. When lawyers read that and we're like, whoa, 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 whoa. What about these words? What about that word? What is that? And so, lawyers are very sensitive to language, and we are hyper-focused on how something is phrased. And this particular amendment is just has multiple booby traps.
Amendment 2?
Amendment 2, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to delve into that 1 second. I've already gotten one email about that. But I'm curious, does your day-to-day law practice involve animal welfare, or is that sort of a side?
No, that is a side, very much a side.
So what kind of law just day-to-day do you practice?
No, day-to-day, so I am an in-house lawyer, so I'm a corporate lawyer. So
okay.
I went to school in Georgia, and when I moved here, instead of going into law and taking the Florida bar, I took the in-house counsel exception, which means I don't have to take the Florida bar, but I am just an attorney for a corporation.
So like of counsel?
Of counsel, correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to say what corporation or
no?
Okay. Okay.
my views are my own.
I see. Oh, okay. The twain can't meet probably on those.
Yeah,
things.
Right.
I got you. Cool. All right. Well, so let's, because we've been teasing this, and like I said, I got at least one email, and you've started to refer to it. So let's make good on our promise to discuss Amendment 2. So let's start at the most fundamental level. Like, what is it? What does it seek to do, or what does it claim to seek to do?
Okay, well, so all Floridians, on your ballot this November, there are going to be multiple amendments. Amendment 2 is called the Right to Fish and Hunt. And you may think, well, we already have the right to hunt and fish, and you are correct. Under Florida statute, the Florida statutes already recognize the right to hunt and fish. So then what in the world is this amendment doing on your ballot? And that the answer is, the people who want this amendment are trying to expand the right to hunt. And they're doing it in two ways. The first way, which to me is the scariest, is that in the language you can read, Amendment 2 says that hunting is going to be the, quote, preferred means of managing wildlife. So what does that mean? Well, it means that killing animals, hunting, will be the first choice. It will be the primary choice because it is the preferred means.
When they say controlling, they mean controlling the population.
They actually don't use the word control. It uses the word manage.
Right. I meant to say manage. So what do they mean by manage? Manage the population? Manage some
manage
other
anything. Any issue that you
so it's purposely vague.
It's purposely vague to make to so that it can cover anything.
Any kind of scenario.
Any kind of scenario, yeah.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
So, say, for example, we have, there are some issues in the rural areas of Florida where there has been an increase in bear human contact.
Yeah.
Because in the rural areas, they like to leave their trash out everywhere and not buy bear-resistant trash cans.
Which invites the bears. Yeah.
So instead of buying bear-wise trash cans, which would be the easy solution, they just would rather not do that and shoot the bear. That is what they want to do.
Right.
And so this amendment, if it passes, will be like, okay, you want to shoot the bear to manage wildlife, then you now have a constitutional right to do that. Even though it is proven that buying bear-resistant trash cans are 90% plus effective to reducing bear-human conflict, that doesn't matter. Science doesn't matter, and facts don't matter.
Don't confuse us with facts.
With this amendment, it's not going to matter that there are better non-lethal ways to manage wildlife. This preferred means language and amendment two is basically a mandate to kill animals in Florida. To kill wildlife in Florida.
Because it's just giving people much wider latitude to do, like the example you just gave about like someone who doesn't want to get the right trash can. The bear comes there. It's like, I'm going to shoot the bear because the bear was coming in my
house.
Because I felt threatened.
Right.
Isn't that going to be what their claim would
that's
be?
Gonna, and they, yeah. they don't even have to have a claim because they'll say, well, I have a constitutional right to hunt.
I don't have to defend myself.
It could just be, I just felt like shooting this baby bear because it's my constitutional right to do it.
So I'm hoping, but I'm fearing that's not the case. That's kind of like an outlier example, but it's probably not, because I think a lot of people would say, as you said in the first part of your explanation about Amendment 2, that people can hunt and fish here, and certainly in Florida, no one's shy about fishing, and even not
of
that
course.
Shy about hunting. So they're able to do it, so it's not like they're unable to do it, and
right.
this
That's
is going to
exactly
change
right.
their status. So why is the big push, other than kind of the example you just gave, but I mean, like I say, I'm hoping that's kind of a weird anomaly. Why are people pushing so hard to have this? Are there other things that they're going to, well, at least the fear is that they're going to do by, quote unquote, managing?
Yes, because so the preferred means, you know, it could open up hunting season, right? So like we had a bear hunt in Florida a few years ago, and the FWC was like, okay, we can have a bear hunt now. Well, if this amendment passes, the bear hunt and the trophy hunters are going to say, well, we now have a constitutional right to hunt. We can just hunt. We don't need approval
Don't need a season. It sounds
we
like
don't
maybe.
Need it. They're going to argue that they don't need a season.
Yeah.
If the FWC tries, they will challenge it in court and say, well, now FWC, we didn't have a constitutional right before, but we're going to challenge you now because now we have a constitutional right.
Wow.
And so when we had the bear hunt a few years ago, that was supposed to, so the FWC was like, okay, we're going to have a bear hunt, but it's going to last 7 days, and we're going to have, these are the rules and regulations. These hunters killed so many bears, they had to stop the hunt in 2 days. And they even recorded someone killing a lactating mother bear.
I remember that.
And, you know, how sad is that? So right now, the status quo is if Amendment 2 is defeated, if enough people vote no on Amendment 2, it means that we can keep the status quo. You know, maybe the FWC authorizes a bear hunt. Maybe they don't. But if this Amendment 2 passes, then the people who want to trophy hunt and bear hunt and want no limitations on hunting, they are going to challenge every single rule the FWC tries to issue, even if it's rational or not, because they're going to say, wait, now I have a constitutional right. And they are going to challenge that in court.
So, well, this might be the moment to include at least one of the emails. We're starting to get some other emails, of course, on this topic. But one, the earlier ones that came in said, I heard that Amendment 2 would allow for bear traps for hunting. Is that true?
Yes. So the other part of Amendment 2 that is scary, so we've been talking about preferred means, that hunting will basically be the top primary means of managing wildlife. The other language that I want Floridians to read in Amendment 2 is the phrase traditional methods. Now, most of us, right, if you're just skimming along your ballot and you say, oh, traditional methods of hunting, of course, guns, bows and arrows, but you're not thinking of steel traps. you're not thinking of leg traps, you know, where the animal gets their leg snared and they chew their leg off because they're trying to escape the trap. Are Floridians okay with those traditional methods? And, you know, let's think about, what about clubbing an animal to death? That's a traditional method of hunting, right?
Yeah.
And so all of these cruel archaic poison. Poison is a traditional method that was used to hunt wildlife. And so if with Amendment 2, you are saying you're not just giving the right to hunt. You are saying that someone has the constitutional right to use a traditional means. Whatever, if someone can go to court and say, well, this is a traditional means, then they are going to argue that that method is constitutionally protected, no matter how cruel. So by saying no on Amendment 2, you're saying, okay, maybe there's the right to hunt, but I'm going to vote no on Amendment 2 because I don't support any and all traditional methods. We still need to be able to regulate, you know, cruel body-crushing traps. We need to be able to, you know, require licenses or permits for some types of methods. And unless this unless Amendment 2 is defeated, that's what we're going to face. It's kind of like if you support Amendment 2, then you're supporting any cruel method. You're supporting hunting being the first option to handling wildlife. And if you don't support both of those, then you should be voting no on Amendment 2.
So back to one of your earlier examples with the information you just now provided, let me go back to the people that are kind of living in a more rural area and don't have any kind of special trash can that's bear-proof. Mm-hmm. So if they wanted to, if this were to pass under Amendment 2, would they be able to put a bear trap by their house or whatever, in theory, because they're worried about the bear coming, even though they could have taken a step to prevent that or minimize that?
If Amendment
that
2 passes?
Yeah.
Likely.
Yeah.
So right now, the FWC has rules and regulations about traps.
Yeah.
But if Amendment 2 passes, hunters will challenge those rules and say,
so
look, we now have a constitutional right.
It's the classic slippery slope, it sounds like.
It is the classic slippery slope, except I usually don't like the slippery slope argument because we're just going off the cliff here.
Yeah.
Because now you're saying that you have a constitutional right, it's a public right. This amendment too, okay, is not just placed any old where in the Constitution. It's placed in Article 1, your basic declarations of right. That means they're trying to elevate hunting, so killing animals, they're trying to elevate hunting to like your right to free speech, your right to due process. Like, is killing animals a fundamental right? And if you don't think so, then does hunting animals should be elevated that high? You know, when we did, I was on the campaign for Amendment 13 to end dog racing in Florida. Do you know where the Amendment 13 to end dog racing in Florida is? It's all the way down in Article 10 under miscellaneous.
Did our best to bury it.
I didn't care where it was put. I mean, as long as we ended dog racing, I didn't care where in the Constitution it was placed. But the point is, this Amendment 2 is trying to elevate hunting so far up to be a basic constitutional right. It's just above and beyond reasonable.
Yeah. And also, again, it seems like such a weird leap from something that's already, people can hunt, as we've already established, and they can fish currently. So this is just seeming like no one's right is being denied currently.
Right.
It's just that the expansion of the rights presents some pretty dark pictures.
Very dark consequences for wildlife. You know, if anyone has any questions, they can look up Florida Statute 379.104. 379.104. That is already in our books. That's the recognition of the right to hunt and fish there. And voting no on Amendment 2 is not going to change that. What's in that statute is in that statute. Amendment 2 is trying to elevate the right to hunt. It's trying to elevate saying, okay, we have this statutory right, but we want to make it ironclad, and we want to make hunting a fundamental right. We want to constitutionally protect traditional methods of hunting, no matter how cruel. And we want hunting to be the first thing we try when managing wildlife, even if we have other non-lethal alternatives.
And it seems to me, I'm sure you've talked to a lot of people, including people who are pro-amendment, too, right, just in the course of your work. Because it seems to me that they seem to argue that the measure more tangibly or explicitly protects the right to hunt and fish, as you kind of articulated, that has its own set of repercussions, and avoids those activities from bans, which I guess there have been bans in other states, and that's partly what the, is that what they're using as arguments?
Well, or, so
I mean, I'm just trying to really get the argument for yes onto more clear in my head, just because, you know, not surprisingly, it just seems kind of counterintuitive to the nth degree for me.
Yeah, to the nth degree. So what they want is, okay, so you when you challenge a constitutional right in court, the court has to apply what lawyers call strict scrutiny. So it is the highest level of judgment a court is going to give a law if a constitutional right is involved. So that's why the right to hunt is on here, is because they want any regulation that is that the FWC tries to initiate, that it gets challenged and the court will have to apply the strictest scrutiny reviewing that law. Now, right now, if FWC issues a regulation and it gets challenged, because the right to hunt is in the statutes, if an FWC rule gets challenged, there really is, it's just a rational basis. The court's going to say, well, did the FWC have a rational basis for enacting this regulation? Well, the people who want Amendment 2 are saying, well, that's too low of a standard. We want the standard that the court has to review a regulation to be so high that it basically will fail, that a regulation will fail. And my understanding of the yes on two is that, which doesn't make any sense to me, that they think that the right to hunt is actually threatened. Like someone I don't think there is even a case where someone is challenged, you don't have the right to hunt, or you don't have, I don't think there is a case law
right,
that
well,
in
that's
existence.
That's what I was trying to get at before, is like,
that someone, or in the legislature.
Who's denying people the right to fish or hunt currently?
Right. And in our Florida legislature, which is, you know, let's focus on Florida here, who has offered a bill that says we want to reverse hunting completely and ban hunting? Who has done that?
Right.
I want to know a name. I want to know a bill number.
In other words, who are you reacting to?
Who are you reacting to in Florida? And someone will be like, well, in California or in Oregon. Are we in California or Oregon? We're in Florida.
Yeah.
And Florida has, Floridians are very proud of their freedoms, shall we say?
Sure.
And so I don't see Florida being persuaded or influenced by any other state.
Okay.
And there is no threat to hunting or fishing in any other...
Presently.
Presently, no.
Yeah.
No.
So people might use that as part of their argument in favor of amendments.
Well,
they're
saying, well, maybe in 50 years
someone could challenge it.
Like, well,
someone could propose a ban, and we don't want that, so we'll take a step now.
We'll take a step now, because in 50 years,
the right
who knows?
That we don't,
if you know, the planet exists.
Yeah. Let me let folks know again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Stress. My guest is Melissa Zepeda, an attorney and animal rights advocate. She'll be speaking at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest November 2nd at Perry Harvey Senior Park. And she's speaking with us now primarily about Amendment 2. We're going to try, although I'm not sure we're going to have time to get into some other stuff. You're invited to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So not surprisingly, more emails have come in. Couple are just too long to read, but at least one or two of those have dealt with suggesting that habitat change, like all the development and building and whatever, has kind of fostered some of this development. What's your response to that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the land that once belonged to wildlife will continue to disappear in Florida, and that's going to lead to more wildlife and human encounters. And if Amendment 2 passes, killing animals is going to be the preferred means of dealing with that. And that's really cruel. And, you know, if Florida's population is going to expand and we're going to take the only home the animals have, then to me, the least we can do is to treat them humanely and just not automatically kill them, because that's what a few people want. You know, keep in mind, there are, of the Floridian population, there's only 1% of hunters. And so Amendment 2, we're catering to 1% of the Florida population? Well, that makes no sense to me. Why would we pass Amendment 2 to cater to 200-something thousand hunters? So I think that's 1%. It could be even less than percent of the Florida population, when most of us love wildlife. We like going to our state parks. We like seeing wildlife. And, you know, if Amendment 2 passes, the threat, the worry is that the Amendment 2 passes, and then they're going to be like, well, we want hunting in state parks now. So what now? That will be challenged, because they're going to say, well, I now have a constitutional right to hunt, so I should be able to hunt in any state park. And that will if that happens, that will have to get to court to decide. And are we going to trust the courts how that's going to be handled?
Well, I know you don't like the phrase or the idea of slippery slope, but this is kind of exactly an example of what I meant by slippery slope, because the example you're talking about now, like, I hadn't even pondered, and that's further horrifying, as if we aren't already in sort of a deeply disturbing area to begin with.
Right. So. Right, because, you know, the FWC can say, okay, we're going to open up deer hunting to this area, and then they issue their permits or their licenses, and so be it. And so voting no on Amendment 2 just means we're just going to keep the status quo. Everything just stays the same, so we keep the balance of power. Whereas, you know, if Amendment 2 passes, it's going to completely throw out of whack the balance of power, because now it's going to be hunting. How are we going to manage wildlife? Kill the animal. How are you going to handle this issue? Kill the animal. How are you going to handle?
And you don't have to even take a moment.
Right. And so it's going to be very difficult. I don't know how much time we have, but there is one booby trap in Amendment 2 that.
Well, let's get to that. Let me quickly ask you this question.
Okay.
There's some more good questions that have come
in.
Okay,
good.
This one says, is the governor using our tax dollars to push this amendment similar to how he's using my tax dollars to oppose Amendment 4? That's one of our emailer questions.
You know, Amendment 2 is so under the radar. Someone in the news recently gave $100,000 to the Yes on Amendment 2 campaign, and I think he is the agriculture commissioner, but I'm not quite certain on that. But it was in the news recently, but I did not see anything about DeSantis specifically donating money. But I do know that one of the elected officials recently gave $100,000.
And quickly, will Amendment 2 allow people to shoot coyotes?
Yes. Coyotes are wildlife.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think insert any animal into that question.
Yeah.
So let's hear about the booby trap, because I want to make sure we don't run out of time.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Okay. We've been talking about animals a lot. This is a sleeper issue that you're not going to know about unless you are listening to the show or you hear me speak. Or you research the no2two.org website. So way back when the Florida legislature wrote this bill, it actually included one extra sentence. It included the sentence to protect property rights and to make it so that it does not restrict trespass laws. Well, if you read Amendment 2 now, that language was mysteriously deleted.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
So right now, your Amendment 2 on your ballot, it does not reference a preservation for property rights, or it no longer has that language that says that this amendment is not going to restrict laws relating to trespass. So what does that mean? What that means is, in theory, someone could, while hunting a deer or a bear, could chop onto your land in pursuit of that wildlife and shoot the wildlife. And you may try to stop that person and say, hey, you're on my land and you're trespassing. And someone is going to say, well, tough luck. I now have a constitutional right to hunt. And this is the only place I can hunt, because that is where the wildlife is, on your property. And so for the people who don't have fences or don't have no trespassing signs, because they just like to have their open land, that's going to be a real issue for them, because this will get to court if this happens, because people are going to be mad seeing hunters traipse across their land to pursue wildlife. And they may be other hunters, but who wants someone coming onto their property, trespassing on their property with a gun? Because so if this will get to court, right? Because something will happen. Someone was going to try to push this. They're going to say, I have a constitutional right. And someone is going to say, well, but I have property rights, and that, you know, that needs to be respected. And it'll get to court, and the court's going to say, well, the legislature, let's look at what the legislature did. They had the property rights protection language in there, but they deleted it. So I guess, right, the theory is the constitutional right to hunt will trump your property rights. That's the concern.
Wow.
And to say, that'll never happen is absolutely full-hearted. I mean, to think that no one is going to be challenging this to me is absolutely in fairy tale land.
Yeah.
And, wow. You know, for the people who love, we've been talking a lot about land animals, wildlife, but this affects fishing too. So the preferred means language, right? So fishing will be the preferred means. Traditional methods. So traditional methods like gill nets. I didn't know what a gill net was until I moved to Florida. And a gill net is basically what people call the wall of death, because it's a netting dropped. And it grabs everything. It grabs our manatees, our dolphins. And it caused so much destruction that it was put in the Constitution to severely restrict gill nets. Well, if that prohibition is, I believe, in Article 10 as well, way down in the miscellaneous section of the Florida Constitution. Well, if Amendment 2 passes, fishing using traditional means includes gill nets. The fishermen, the commercial fishermen who want to use gill nets, will challenge this law. We'll challenge the law against gill nets, because they're going to say, well, I have a constitutional right to fish, and that includes traditional means, so that includes gill nets. So any ban on gill nets can be challenged. And they're going to take it to court. And you may say, well, they're going to lose. Really? You want to take that chance?
Yeah, this traditional means thing is like loaded territory every which way, it seems like, right?
It is. And most people will look at it and, you know, especially with everyone's busy lives, they're going to be like, oh, traditional means, it just means, you know,
the way we've always done it.
The way we've always, you know, shooting with a handgun or fishing with a pole with a string, you know, it includes so much more. So,
well, sadly, we are out of time. In fact, a little bit over our time, but I want to say this has been Melissa Zepeda, and she'll be speaking at Tampa Bay Veg Fest. That's November 2nd at Perry Harvey Senior Park. She's top of the ticket, first speaker out of the box, I believe, at 11:30.
Come see me.
And TampaBayVegFest.com for more information about Tampa Bay Veg Fest. Any website or anything you want to give about Amendment 2 before we run out of time?
Nototo.org. N-O-T-O, the number 2.org.
Okay.
For more information.
Okay, cool. Okay, Melissa, well, thank you so much.
And, thank you, Duncan. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, I wish we had more time. Maybe we'll talk
That's
more.
That's okay.
Bye,
everyone in Tampa Bay.
There you go. So in a moment or two, I'll speak with Jason Cowan of Friends of Boyd Hill Nature Preserve about this important fundraiser, Brews for Bird, on Sunday, October 13th, aiming to raise money to protect raptors from rodenticides. We'll hear more about this when Jason joins me in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WNF. Right now, though, I'm going to step into the comic corner with Matt Bronger and a nifty piece, notwithstanding a couple of data references, called Panda Butler, from Matt Bronger on today's Comedy Corner on WNF.
Do you guys know what The Secret is? It's a book that was trumpeted by Oprah that is very big in Los Angeles, very big with actor spiritualists, I like to call them, which is basically when you just want the universe to give you everything you want in a really selfish manner, and you want to be a star, you want to be an Entertainment Weekly, and you pray for the wrong things. That's all that is. But I'm not knocking it. Look, I think positive visualization is a handy tool, and it's good. It's good to stay positive. When you're negative all the time, it doesn't help you at all. But I don't necessarily believe in The Secret, but I don't know. It might work. Asking the universe for something might work. So I'm going to try it right now. I'm going to try The Secret and see if it works, okay? So I am going to throw out right now what I want from the universe and hope that I get it. So here we go, okay? Panda butler! That's all I want. I want a panda that is also a butler. That's it. I want a panda that walks on his hind legs and often fails and tries to be my butler. Walks in while I'm watching TV with a tray of champagne flutes, which he will drop. Granted, he will drop them, but he'll try. Walks in. It's okay, Clive. You're still my man. High five. Actually, any bear that won't kill me. That's all I want, right? I will rubberize my home wherever he wants, right? Just as long as he does. Like, can you imagine just sitting and watching TV with a bear that is also sitting and his little belly is going up and down with his breathing? His bear belly. You can put stuff on it, like a tray of cheese and crackers. And he occasionally just yells and you love it because it feels like commentary, right? You're right, dude. Jersey Shore is the end of all civilization. High five.
That was Matt Pronger in today's Comedy Corner of the piece called Panda Butler, taken from his 2012 album, Shovel Fighter. Now it's time to speak with Jason Cowan of Friends of Boyd Hill Nature Preserve to get filled in on this Brews for Birds fundraiser on the horizon for Sunday, October 13th. Here's Jason Cowan on Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. I know my friend... Bev Capshaw spoke with you at length about Boyd Hill Nature Preserve before, but maybe you could just provide at least a brief overview of the preserve, just for people who maybe didn't hear that conversation, where it is or aren't familiar with the place, what it does, that kind of thing.
So Boyd Hill is a preserve that's owned by the city of St. Petersburg in South St. Pete on the backside of Lake McGorry. So it has habitats from, you know, lake and waterfront and swamp and marsh up to sand, scrub, and uplands habitats, too. It's kind of unique because of the amount of educational components we have at the preserve. There's a lot of dedicated city staff that all they do is program and educate. And me with the Friends of Boyd Hill do a lot of support fundraising for various things like our Armed Butter Prey educational program, as well as, like, you know, free camp programs for kids that can't afford it, things like that.
Okay, cool. So let's get into... Brews for Birds event in a moment, but as a context for this upcoming fundraiser, can you talk a little bit about the risk to raptors from rodenticides, which is kind of fundamental, obviously, to the fundraiser itself?
So, I mean, modern wildlife in urban areas faces a lot of risks. One that we're seeing an increasing pretty big issue with is rodenticide. Basically, there's this fancy word called bioaccumulation. And so what it really means in this context is when you're poisoning things that you don't want, you tend to poison things that eat them. So in our specific case, raptors, especially things like great horned owls and hawks, things that would eat things like rodents, you know, mice and rats that we poison. So it's become a pretty big issue because the poisons are getting more and more toxic, more and more harmful, and farther away from what you can actually treat.
So... with that being kind of the looming and it sounds like expanding threat, it sounds like part of what this will jump ahead of, get ahead of ourselves on purpose for a sec here for the purpose of the fundraiser. It sounds like that's to be able to perform kind of more lab tests on these rodents, I guess.
So really the whole goal is to, one, try to convince people to use safe alternatives. And part of that is educating, and part of that's awareness. And a big part of it, really, from our point of view, is trying to get local governments to change their practices first, as a leader. And so, really, what we find is most rehabilitators don't have the funds to test animals. They know why they likely died, but they can actually prove it. And so, if you're trying to implement change, local governments, you want to actually have proof. So one of our goals was to be able to actually have a resource that's not part of the regular rehab funds, and able to actually send dead birds out for necropsies to irrefutably prove the link to rodenticide poisoning, and then use that to go and say, look, there's no debate about this. This is happening, and we need to do something about it. And so really the goal of it was to be able to make that link, but not take any resources or money away from the rehabbers' funds for helping the other birds that are still alive.
Okay, so this sounds like it's a super complicated thing to really address properly and therefore expensive in terms of those lab tests, et cetera.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Brews for Birds itself, Jason. So it's Sunday, October 13th. It's from 2 to 6 p.m. So walk me through this event. So people kind of go to, I guess, Grand Central Brew House first. These are all St. Pete places on that Sunday afternoon. It's basically like a beer crawl.
Yep, exactly. That's exactly what it is. So it starts at Grand Central for about an hour, and then it goes to Three Daughters, then Cage, and then Pinellas Ale Works. And we'll have different of our partner groups kind of stationed at each one to highlight some things. I will put out there that Seaside Seabird Sanctuary suffered some pretty devastating losses to the facility. I talked to them yesterday, a little bit via email, and they do plan on still attending. And we do plan on making a lot of the day of donations go to them and their rebuild purpose, because they're a huge part of rehabbing these Raptors to in our community.
Yeah, no, that, from what I gather, they really got battered over there, and they're really having trouble digging out, and just, I think even
yeah,
just...
they need a lot of support, and they are, I would use the word vital to our local bird populations and rehab efforts.
Yes, so they'll be probably additionally served by this event on the 13th.
That's our goal, is to, you know, they were going to come anyways, but we really want to help push some love over towards them with this event, too.
Yeah. We usually don't talk about the price or something, but this is on the air here, unless it's a WNF event. But I will just say there's kind of a standard donation fund, you know, as a way to sort of help the birds and help amass a fund, and then you can additionally, I guess, donate or make a separate donation to help Seaside Seabird Sanctuary. So how would people, because I know there's sort of, I think you guys kind of capped the whole event at 50 people, so in case people are more than that want to get in on it, how would people like make sure they don't miss out? What's the best way to kind of register or sign up?
So it's all through Eventbrite. My guess is that it probably will sell out by the time we're done talking, or in a little bit. But that doesn't mean you cannot go. These are all public breweries. You are still more than welcome to go to any of them while we're there. You are still welcome to buy any raffle tickets or make donations or be a part of it. You just won't necessarily get the free or the stuff that was promised with the registration. So, but you, even if it does sell out, please do show up, support, and just look at the schedule online and go to those breweries and say hi to us too.
Yeah, no, that sounds really great. It sounds like a great cause, and sort of like now with an additional purpose. Unfortunately,
Absolutely.
Given the Seaside Seabird Sanctuary's rough go in the wake of Hurricane Helene. So, okay, Jason, well, this all sounds good. I appreciate you joining us today on Talk Animals. Good luck with the event, and thanks for all your good work.
Thank you for having me, guys.
All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talk Animals on WNF Tampa. Coming up, it's The Conversation, a great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. And we shift back to music at 1 o'clock with Jim Bannon, followed at 3 o'clock by Nancy C, and then into our music, Latin music block after that. So it's all great stuff coming up momentarily here. Keep it here on WNF 88.5. It's WNF Tampa, St. Pete, Largo, Weeki, Wachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening.